and a warm welcome to the Offside Rule Women's World Cup edition in association with Spotify. Sacré bleu. I've got my French in there. We've got a rest day tomorrow. We're hyped up here in the studio, though. We've been checking out the games today, and we now know who is in the round of 16 at this 2019 Women's World Cup. More on that in just a moment. But for now, let's welcome our studio guests. I'm Kate Borsay. Hello. Back again. We've got former West Ham, Chelsea and England defender Claire Rafferty.
Hello.
I'm calling you Ready Brett Raff.
Why is that then?
Because you've been ready every day of this World Cup to work.
I'm exhausted. I'm so glad the group stage is done now so we can actually digest the information that's happened.
And alongside Raff, it's multi-platform, multi-sport, multi-named broadcaster Anne-Marie Batson. Welcome back.
Bonjour.
Oh, there you go. The French is in. Well, look, the group stages are done and dusted. We're going to be digesting all that today, as well as hearing from lioness Beth Mead and legend of the game, Kelly Smith. Hurrah. But before all that, it's time to look at today's action.
Megan Rapinoe. Sends it in low, near post, it's flicked in front, and Eos is on top! Lindsay Horan will get her second of this World Cup!
Well, the fastest goal of the World Cup so far got this game up and running as USA cruised to a 2-0 victory against Sweden after a goal from Lindsay Horan on 3 minutes and an own goal from Jonna Andersson in the second half.
I look at it and I think
this game, it had all the
prospect
of being such a great matchup. We've been building up to it all week, for goodness sake. Proper competition for both sides, but did it live up to what we expected, Raf?
No. Absolute anticlimax. I think it was very clear that Sweden weren't really challenging for that top spot. I think, you know, sometimes it's about picking your battles, and I think that's exactly what they did. That's very evident in the amount of players they've rotated. And I think that rotation in the back line really created a few issues for the goalkeeper, Hedvig Linde, who looked quite shaky. They conceded early on, and it just kind of was a bit of a calamity. I mean, other than that, are we going to ignore the fact you've got a T-shirt on that says croissant? Or... Or we'll just brush over that, okay?
We are talking about USA Sweden, but let's just take a little juncture to address the croissant T-shirt. This was for Lindsay Hooper. She's been learning a French word every day. Yeah. This was me giving Lindsay a French word for today, but she's not on the show, so it's kind of a little bit wasted, but it has been noted. All right, well, croissants aside, a much changed side for Sweden. Manager Peter Gerhardsen, is this his loss to carry then, because of all those changes?
It's a difficult one, really, because I just don't know where this team stands at the moment. And I think, yeah, Raf's right. In terms of, I think they just went in there thinking, you know, let's just get this done. We're not particularly interested in topping the group, and hence the massive changes. And you have to ask him, what was his plan?
I just don't get it.
No, I think ultimately they probably were weighing up their losses, and they realised that, do they want to expend that much energy trying to come top when actually it is a mountain to climb? USA are, on paper, you know, a lot better than Sweden for me. So I haven't been convinced by Sweden for this whole tournament. And I think it's quite a clever move, really. You know, if you're not going to go and win the game, why not actually try and rotate and save some of your players for the games coming up? And yes, they've missed out on a more favourable route, but, you know, they've got freshness and they've been able to rotate, and that was obviously his game plan. And it's all about the longevity in this tournament.
But let's hope that doesn't cost them in the next game, because then questions will be asked, well, why did you do X, Y, and Z in the US game?
And I've got a quote from Peter here. He says, it was the most difficult starting 11 I've ever selected because there were so many parameters to consider. Monday is the most important match, so that was my number one priority when I picked my lineup.
So basically he's saying, yes, he's saving his players for that game on Monday.
Yeah, absolutely. And we know what they're, you know, like I said, we don't know what they're capable of, but we know one thing we do know about Sweden, they are a very physical team. We didn't see that today, you know, two goals down, there was no reaction from players whatsoever.
Sometimes when you pick a squad like that, you send out a message to your players without even, you know, even addressing the issue in the first place. I doubt he's turned around and said, look, we're not going for top spot. He's probably turned around and rotated the team and said, look, I trust all of yous, but actually, in fact, it's not his strongest 11.
So as a player, what does that do for you?
It goes, oh, okay, I'm the second bunch, I'm not in the starting 11. It can affect a whole load of things, because actually if you haven't played a great deal, you're not going to be sharp. You're already starting at a bit of a loss, and I think that just showed in the miscommunications in the back line.
And also, as part of a squad, there should be a will to win at all costs, so he's basically letting them not win this game, or not
putting his best 11 out. And that sends a weird message out, because if you look at, in contrast to the USA, that are so win at all costs, you know, win-win. And this is supposed to be what Phil Neville's done for the England team, yeah. You know, win at all costs. Make sure you get those wins and you can build on them. So it is odd for me. Raph, just looking at the second goal. So it's clipped off Jonna Andersson after Tobin Heath had whipped the cross over past Hedvig Lindahl. It went to VAR, a long wait. Should it have stood?
No, I don't think so. And I think no, because Carly Lloyd was interfering in the play, ultimately. A player's movement, whether she touches the ball or not, it does affect your body shape, it affects your thought process and decision making. So if you know, especially someone like Carly Lloyd is on your shoulder, you are going to slightly adjust your positioning. And to turn around and say that that didn't affect the outcome of the goal, it's just a strange one, because, you know, if we're going to compare it to the Sam Kerr situation, it was exactly the same.
Yes.
So where's the precedent? It's all really confusing. I don't really know what phase of play is it going to stop at? How far back do they go? Does it have to be a kind of clear touch of the play?
Yeah, and the issue is there an obstruction there? And they'd ruled that obviously Sam Kerr was in an offside position, but she wasn't committing an offside offence. So there are grey lines there. Well, who better to digest this with than England legend Kelly Smith? Works a lot over in the States, so she'll be able to give us a great perspective on this one. Let's talk USA first with you, Kelly. I can see you're rattling your notes there. You must have you must have made a few during this one. But USA looked really very much in control of it. Were you surprised by Sweden's lineup?
I was, yeah. I couldn't believe that they changed so many going into the game. For me, it showed that they weren't interested in potentially meeting France in the next round, and they surrendered.
Yes.
With the amount of changes that they made. And you could tell that the US were never going to change their winning mentality to finish second within the group. They started as if they had something to prove. They looked really sharp. They played at such a high tempo the first 45 minutes. It was just a pleasure to watch. They just dominated Sweden all over the park. And it just made it look easy,
their distribution.
They were on it, especially the midfield three of Lavelle, Horan and Mewis. They were outstanding, I thought.
Yeah. Is it cheeky to call Sweden a bunch of cowards again? I don't know.
That's what we were joking about in the studio. Actually, because, I think they were happy to finish second just to avoid playing the hosts, you know, France in Paris.
Yeah. Spain next up for USA. Can Spain cause them any issues at all? Because it feels so hard to look beyond USA being in the final.
Yeah, I think, you know, Spain for me have been disappointing. Mm. They have all the technical, talented players in the world, but they just have no end product and no real natural goal scorer. They keep the ball for long periods of time, but really don't do anything with it. Can't put the ball in the back of the net after chance. And you just sit there watching them and I become frustrated because I'm like, you need to shoot, or, you know, you need to do better in front of goals. But I can't see anything but a USA win against Spain.
Especially against China as well. I thought Spain was so disappointing with that one, because we were all really looking forward to that tussle and we didn't get it, did we really?
No, not at all. They didn't turn up.
No. All right. So it looks like a good one for USA next. But what's the reaction like from USA fans? Because you must be hearing the buzz from them over there. And of course, they are over in France in huge numbers. So you'll be having big audiences back home, and I know Fox are investing so much in this tournament that they're so interested in, you know, growing the game to heights that it's never been before. What's the buzz like there? What are the expectation levels, I suppose?
Expectation levels are there for them to lift that trophy again. They're so full of confidence. And so many fans turn up each day outside the set trying to get themselves on TV singing and that. It's just a good buzz in Paris, to be honest. But yeah, that's what they expect. And certainly from going off the performance that we just witnessed, you know, I can't see too many teams beating this team, even with, you know, the change. Judy Ertz didn't play, but it didn't really affect the team. You saw Alex Mung come off at half time. Hopefully she's okay. But yeah, they are very, very good all over the park and full of confidence. I thought they looked a little bit suspect down the left-hand side at times with Crystal Dunn and her positioning being a little bit exposed. But other than that, I don't really see too many weaknesses.
And she's got such a great depth of squad, hasn't she, Jill Ellis? And that was demonstrated by the second game in, already having used all of her 20 outfield players. So that tells you everything you need to know about her trust in the team and also the depth of talent she's got there as well. It's awesome.
She can field a whole second team and still very well in this tournament. I think it was Ali Krieg come on and said that they're number one in the world and their bench players are just as good. So it kind of sounds a little bit arrogant that they think they've got 23 players, you know, starting 11 and their bench is just fantastic. Also, that can wind a few people up just hearing that. But they are very good. They're so strong. Even if they make a few tactical changes, the players coming on are just, you know, world class.
Yeah. Have you ever seen a USA side as good as this?
The 2015 squad was very, very good. But it's just you hearing the talk amongst the players and the little bits of documentaries that we're showing, just saying how they're so close and so together. And this is a very unified team and it's the closest unit that has ever been. It just makes you think that there's something really special within this side and they want to retain their trophy. I mean, obviously the lawsuit that's going on, they want that's in the back of their minds and wanting to prove that they're worthy of equal pay. So they're fighting on a couple of different fronts in terms of, you know, retaining their title and then obviously the lawsuit that is going on. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much to Kelly Smith there. Some very interesting thoughts indeed. Let's look at the other Group F fixture, a late controversial penalty decision. How many times are we going to say that in this World Cup? And a Thailand own goal still wasn't enough to keep Chile in the competition. The South Americans needed to score at least three to have any chance of advancing through to the final 16. But the final scoreline between Thailand and Chile saw Chile win 2-0, not enough. And then both teams eliminated from the World Cup. Late drama in this one, as I've mentioned, with 5 minutes to go and that contentious penalty. Chile missed it, though, and with it, of course, the chance to make it through to the last 16. But should the pen have been awarded, Raf?
Yes, I'm going to go with yes on this one. I think because the Thailand goalkeeper was just a little bit too reckless when she came out with the ball. It was kind of a follow through, so her momentum was taking her forward. But
yeah, so she clashed into Aritia, you know,
exactly. It was a clash, and it ultimately was a foul. It's just a shame that she wasn't able to convert the penalty because that was the difference between them going through or not. And
we thought that we could have a potential Scotland moment there, didn't we? Francisca Lara hitting the crossbar and it was, but of course it would have changed the outcome for England as well. So we were desperately trying to look at the ramifications of all this. It didn't change factors, though, for England or for either team. Both Thailand and Chile are out. Well, before we get into the rest of today's matches, let's head to Nice to catch up with Lioness Beth Mead. Beth, I have to say thank you for talking to us. It must have been a late night for you, Lionesses.
Yeah, it was, you know. I think time was done recovery eating and managed to jump into bed. It got quite late. But I guess it's part and parcel of these 9 o'clock kickoff. But no, yeah, it was a tiring night. But yeah, we got our 3 points and exactly what we wanted. So we can't be feeling too bad.
How does the England team celebrate getting top marks? Are you going to have celebrations now? Or are they going to be delayed whilst you try and digest it all?
Until we win that World Cup, there's no celebrations in camp right now. So I guess we're over the moon. It's the first time we've ever won 3 games in a group stage. But yeah, now we've got to push on for that last 16 and start getting prepared for that one.
And what about your own personal journey? This is your first ever World Cup. You set up that goal for Jodie Taylor against Argentina. Just tell us about your own experiences of this World Cup, because that must have been an insane moment for you.
Yeah, no, it's been ridiculous, you know. I've loved every minute. I've loved every minute of everything around it, you know, the games, the training, the environment, the moving on to different hotels. It's all very, very exciting. I'm just glad, I guess, to be a part of it. And I've been lucky enough to now have been playing and starting for these teams. But yeah, it's been an amazing feeling.
And Jodie Taylor's your roommate, is she?
She is, yeah.
So I hope she gave you coffee in bed the next day or some sort of reward for setting up that goal.
She'll give me a cup of tea every night, to be fair, so I'll give her that one.
Biscuits as well, please, Jodie.
And it's demanding a little bit more, I think.
You do, I think, Beth, because you could probably do a fair few more of those. And in terms of your own role, you're obviously keen to play anywhere, really, across that wing, whether it's left or right for Phil Neville. Are you determined to be useful for him? Is that your way of being as much a part of this squad as anyone else and trying to get as much game time?
But I want to be in this tournament to play minutes, you know. I want to help my team play, and I guess left, right sided, whatever it may be, I want to be in that starting 11, and I think I've just got to work as hard as I possibly can to make it impossible for Phil to kind of leave me out. Yeah, there's a lot of healthy and competitive energy within the players and against different players, and hopefully I can just do what I can when given the chance.
And are your family out there with you, Beth?
They were here for the first game, but they actually aren't. Hopefully they're going to come out for the knockout stages now.
You need to get them back out, definitely. Of course you do.
Yeah,
my little spy
do.
Yesterday
definitely.
Told me that you and Baroness Sue Campbell had a big hug. Tell us about the role of Baroness Sue Campbell, because we don't mention her much, but actually she's a really integral part of your team, isn't she?
Yeah, no, Sue's been amazing. I mean, really, the girls all get on with her. She's a funny character, but no, we all love her to bits. And for what she's done for the women's game, we owe a lot to her. And yeah, no, she's been amazing. She's a great character to have around. And yeah, she brings a little bit of her own buzz, but no, it's a nice buzz that she brings.
Beth Mead there, flying the flag for England, and great to catch up with her.
Hello, Offside Rulers. This is producer Ben from the Totally Football Show, here to politely suggest that when you're done with Kate and Co, why don't you mosey on over to us at the Totally Football Show, where we have new shows for you every Monday and Thursday throughout the summer. Currently, we've got James Horncastle telling us why Paul Pogba may not get his move away from Man United.
Where's Pogba going to go? Because ultimately, you look at Real Madrid. Real Madrid have already splurged a hell of a lot of money. Can they go with Pogba? I look at it and I think Juventus is perhaps a more realistic destination for him, because they've got bargaining chips that they can move around. But still going to, for both Real Madrid and Juventus, it's going to be a huge onerous deal for them to do.
We've got Jack Lang at the Copa America talking about goals like this. And we've got Ian McIntosh looking back on the time that Tony Pulis did this.
Once, while interviewing him at West Brom, when we had a chat over breakfast and he slapped my bum on the way into the canteen.
Is that okay?
Yeah, I was absolutely fine with that.
So search for the award-winning Totally Football Show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audioboom and all the usual places, and keep up to date with what we're doing at The Totally Show.
On to Group E then, and in the tweets of Shania Twain, good luck today, Canada. Let's go, girls. But it was the Netherlands who came out on top on this one with a 2-1 win over Canada. All the goals in the second half. Defender Enoch Dekker getting the Dutch off the mark before Canada equalised just 4 minutes later. Christine Sinclair, she's done it, Raf. Well, she hasn't really, but she's but she's on her way. Now just three shy of that Ambi Wambach record. Dutch substitute Linette Berenstein fired the winner in the 75th minute, which means the Netherlands top the group and Canada finish second. So it was defender Dekker who broke the deadlock, the seventh of her international career, 78 appearances. And we thought the Dutch strike force was dangerous. Your thoughts on the game, Anne-Marie?
Obviously, Canada have won their last two matches in the Women's World Cup, and they've had it rather easy up until now. So this was a test for them. And, you know, congratulations, obviously, to Sinclair for getting that goal. And again, game management coming into play here, the fact that she came off during the game as well. There's a lot of strategic decisions being made here around players, as Raf has referenced before in the previous game. So it was interesting to see she coming off. But this was a test for Canada. And, it's a loss and they'll take it away and look what we need to improve on, because they're going to meet Sweden next. I can't see much happening from that game either. These are two teams that haven't excited. They haven't excited me at all in terms
Have
of...
Have Canada excited you, Raf?
No. It is hard. They've got some great players, but yeah, they just don't create a great deal. I think they're overly reliant on Sinclair.
Mm-hmm. What about Jessie Fleming, though? Because she was on again today.
She did okay, but for me, she was handing over the ball a little bit too much, a little bit sloppy in possession. I know she has the potential to be great. Same with Huytema. I know she's only young as well.
But yeah, 18.
They don't really create a great deal. And it's just, especially if they're going to play Sweden, I just feel like they're going to cancel each other out, because they're quite similar in the way they play.
They have played a defensive game so far. They were the only team at this World Cup to not have a single shot on target against them. Resolutely defended. But you can't win a World Cup like that. It has to, you know, especially when you're coming up against the Netherlands. Yeah. And so do we need to look at how they were tactically today and whether they played the right game? And also bringing Christine Sinclair off at 1-1 seemed bizarre to me.
Yeah, I think obviously it is preservation for the next round, but they do need to get their fullbacks higher for me. You've got the likes of Chapman, who is an attacking fullback, but they don't really utilise her as much as they should do and can do. You know, they've got Desiree Scott holding the line there and allowing she should be allowing the fullbacks to bomb on, because, you know, she's a really good defensive midfielder, but they just don't really have that. And that game, I think I might give that game a miss.
Oh my goodness.
They didn't hit the Netherlands where it hurts today for me, Canada. They needed to show that.
We need to see another dimension to them, don't we?
I hope I'm wrong.
They're very one-dimensional.
Yeah, I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just getting producer Abby to check the rota as to when Raf is next in. Raf is in on that day. There you go, Raf.
Say. I'm busy.
Someone phone Raf's agent. She's out of that one. I think Raf will have the flu on Monday. Please don't, says producer Abby. Christine Sinclair, though, here we go, because we do need to give her a few plaudits. Becomes only the second player to score at five Women's World Cup tournaments alongside Brazil's Marta, who achieved the feat last Thursday. So, you know, fair play to Christine Sinclair. She's huge in Canada. She's a massive talisman of the game. She really is. Decker's header, this one for you, Raf, was the Netherlands' fourth headed goal at the Women's World Cup so far, accounting for 44% of their entire total. So hang on, this is something Japan, who they meet next, can really prepare for, right?
Yeah, I mean, physicality wise, the Dutch are going to be superior. I think the average height of the Japanese is 5'4", so they're going to struggle. They need to try and reduce the amount of set plays, reduce the amount of quarters and crosses, and that may mean funneling more central, but then you've got the likes of Medema, Van der Donk in the central area. So, you know, you can try and avoid one threat, but you're pointing them to another. So they've got strength and depth all over the pitch.
That's a really good point.
I think Japan, you know, they're very wasteful in front of goal. We saw that. They've got some fantastic players. Iwabuchi, Sugasawa, but very wasteful.
Netherlands can be physical against them, can't they? We were a bit worried about Netherlands at the start of this tournament, that they were all attacking threat and not much to boost that up at the back. Are we feeling better about Netherlands' chances now?
Absolutely. My view's completely changed of them now, seeing their last couple of performances. They've really stepped up. And I think, you know, Raf's right. Japan have got a real task on their hands, because whichever way they go, the Netherlands will be there. Even if they go, if the Netherlands go wide, which they have done, particularly on the left, you know, Japan's going to need to be able to close that down. So for me, it's going back to when I was last here about their team that just work away very quietly behind the scenes, and all of a sudden there'll be this spark of going forward, and then they get the goal. But I'm fascinated to see the pace of the game, because as we saw with Japan playing England, the pace is extremely quick. Suddenly they just ramp it up, and it's the same with the Netherlands. Can they keep up with each other for 90 minutes? That's going to be really interesting.
All right, well, we're feeling a little bit more hopeful about the Netherlands. Are they? For more on this match from a Dutch perspective, producer Abby spoke with Anne-Marie Posma, Dutch women's football journalist.
There was just this feeling of like, okay, now we've shown everyone what we're capable of. That's pretty much it. They're not speaking of revenge, but it was just like they told us we always had the beliefs in ourselves and we knew what we were capable of, and we really wanted to show it. And well, tonight they did. That's what they said when we talked to them after the match.
We spoke with Derek Ray on the podcast yesterday, and he was telling us about how the Dutch media, they're quite tough on the team. They're really sort of pushing equality, and they will analyse the women's team the same way as they would do the men's team. So how are you reporting back on this one, and how will the wider media be reporting back on how this Dutch side fared against Canada?
Yeah, well, I have to admit, we've been really tough on them. I think that's like they've been really they really want to have this professional approach. But I think we have to understand that there's a difference in approaching them in a professional way and keep comparing them to the men's. Like, I think you have to see this team in what they have done over the past years. And so you have to say like, okay, what has happened 2 years ago and what's happening now? And I have to be honest, I was disappointed in the results, or not the results, I was disappointed in the way they were playing and their lack of development over the past two years. So I've been criticizing them as well. But now what you could see against Canada is that sometimes they're sloppy in the passes, but then you see this amazing quality they have. Like when they touch the ball once or twice, you know, it gains some speed. You get this speed through the game. It's amazing. We have Sherida Spitsa, who's been criticized a lot, being called slow. But what she does, if she just touches the ball three times, like takes it, look one more time and just have this long ball, throws it over the whole midfield, and she can reach the attackers, it's fine. But they haven't been doing that. And they showed us tonight that they're still capable of it. That was good. It was good to see.
So you're saying that the match today has probably been the best performance by the Netherlands so far?
Yeah, for sure. They're growing in the tournament. But they told us they play better against a better team as well. Canada has way more structure in it, right? So they pushed Netherlands into structure. They like it. And they said Cameroon was the most awful game they've ever played. They didn't know where the balls were going. It was so hard to predict when you were in the field, like how would they touch it or what would they do with it? And Canada, it's a better team. And Holland likes to play against better teams.
Let's look ahead then to the round of 16. It's Japan next in Rennes. And of course, Japan knocked the Netherlands out in 2015. How are the team feeling ahead of that one? Because it's fair to say that both sides have been on quite different trajectories in the past 4 years.
Well, I want to say hopeful, but I'm not. I won't use that word again. No, Sarina Wiegman, the head coach of the Netherlands, said that the Netherlands went to Canada with a very young team. And of course, they're still young, but they grew over the years. Japan, 4 years ago, they were slightly older. So a lot of players retired and they start building with a new team. So they have to do some new research on how the team plays. But they're so technical and so good in the small spaces, so it's going to be challenging. But yeah, like I said, Netherlands is growing in the tournament and they like to have better opponents, so they're really looking forward to it. And of course, you want to have your revenge, right? They want to beat them now.
Anne-Marie Posma, Dutch football journalist, there, our thanks to her. Our final match to look at is New Zealand against Cameroon. Now, there's a proverb in Cameroon, ladies, that says impossible is not Cameroonian.
And shoot here. And shoot. Good turn away from Percival. Another great turn. And shoot has put Cameroon into the knockout stages of the Women's World Cup with a quite outstanding goal.
So this one decided by the last kick of the game. Cameroon through to the last 16 of the Women's World Cup for the second tournament running with a 2-1 win over New Zealand. Two goals from the star of the show, Ajara Nchu, New Zealand's only goal of this World Cup, an own goal. The Football Ferns yet to record a single World Cup win and are out. Let's go through the goals. A lovely second goal. Let's start with this one to take Cameroon through. And she really stood out in this game, didn't she, Anne-Marie?
Oh, fantastic. I mean, I had to watch those highlights several times because I was just in awe of what she could do, really. The fact, you know, the twists and the turns and the confidence that she has just to take the ball forward on her own, not reliant on anybody else, just happy just to go for it anyway. And then with her exquisite finishes, I think she's really, really exciting. And if we could have her in the FAWSL, I'd love to see her because I think she'd just bring a bit of spark.
Loved her first goal as well, spinning both defenders and then slotting the ball past the goalkeeper. But to go back to that winning goal, Raf, the defence, you looked at it and were like, well, what's going on here?
So all the action was happening down the other end and the New Zealand players just couldn't recover in time. I think I counted about six Cameroonians in the box and against one or two New Zealand defenders. And I was they actually slowed down the play as well to allow the defence to get back in, but they just couldn't, which for me is strange. You know, it's a World Cup. You should be breaking your neck to get back and defend your goal. And that's the difference there.
It felt like they'd sort of given up at that point, which is an awful thing to say about a team when they're, you know, fighting for World Cup survival. They aren't a bad team, though, are they, Anne-Marie? They got the pre-tournament warm-up win against England and they looked pretty decent. So where's it gone wrong for them?
One would think that having beaten England in that friendly at the Amex at Brighton, that they would have had a lot of confidence going in, and they did. And I think what knocked the stuffing out of them was that loss to Holland at that last 95th minute goal, I think just knocked them for six. And I don't think they've been able to recover since then. And in their defence, the manager there, he doesn't have a big talent pool to choose from at all in terms of his players. He's having to rely on experience, which is a good thing, but also at the same time you need that balance of young players coming through, and unfortunately New Zealand don't have that, and the question is going forward, how is he going to be able to overcome that?
Interestingly, the New Zealand manager Tom Samani was asked if he feels like a failure. Tough question. And he said, you always have a feeling of failure when you don't win any games. I don't think the word failure is the right word. You just come up against teams that are a little better. Is he spinning that? He's only been in the job for just over 6 months, so perhaps harsh to assess him at this point, but he was John Herdman's assistant for that Canada side in 2015. Is the fault the manager's, or is it, as you say, just simply down to a lack of talent pool?
He's got a lot of experience. He's been at World Cups before. Yes, he does have a lack of the available players. Some of them players in the New Zealand team don't even have a team. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, how are you going to raise a standard and level to compete in a World Cup? At the same time, their qualifying route is easier than most, so they don't get exposed to the higher quality team. So when they do get to a World Cup, it is a little bit rabbit in headlights. They're a bit kind of overwhelmed, and I think it did really affect them, that last minute loss against Holland, and they haven't been able to recover since.
Yeah. All right, so Cameroon go on to face England. More on that momentarily, because what does all this mean? We've hinted at a few fixtures, but let's go deep into the round of 16 next. OK, so here's how the round of 16 looks. Norway versus Australia, England versus Cameroon, France versus Brazil, Spain versus USA, Italy take on China, Japan, Netherlands, as we've said, Germany, Nigeria, the second African team to make it through to this last 16, and Canada versus Sweden. That's the game that Raf's definitely going to be in for. Raf and Anne-Marie, I'm going to be asking you for your thoughts on standout ties in just a moment, so have a think. But in the meantime, we've had 24 hours now to digest yesterday's results. We now know that England faced Cameroon, so to give us her take on that game, let's bring back Kelly Smith. Let's talk England now. They face Cameroon in this round of 16. Where's the challenge there for you? Because England doesn't, you know, often play African teams because of the logistics of it, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah.
But what are England expecting?
When I played, the only African team I think we played was Nigeria. And they were always a very physical and difficult side, very pacey. And Cameroon are no different. You know, they're an experienced physical bunch of players with a lot of pace. So it's going to be a tough game. I really didn't see this one lining up like this, if I'm honest.
Yeah, the Netherlands media has said that they found Cameroon really tough, perhaps their toughest of this group stage, which is interesting. What about the Lionesses side, though? Who's particularly impressed you? Who's really stood out for you in this side?
Well, you've got to say Ellen White, the form that she's been in. You come into the tournament expecting Jodie Taylor to start. I know she hadn't played a lot of football, but she's seemed to be the number one. But Ellen's come in and really, you know, stepped up her game and scored 3 goals. She looks lively. She looks hungry. For me, she's been the standout player.
What
I thought Georgia Stanway.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about Georgia. She looks encouraging. And actually, Phil has already highlighted her. I don't know whether this is a good thing or not, but he's highlighted her as a world-class player in the future.
She's certainly got the potential. You can see that, and you've seen that in the FAWSL this year on numerous occasions. You know, a vision, a speed of play. She sees pictures before most players do. She knows what she's doing in her mind. And you could see that the way she turned and played that through ball through. But yeah, she's young. She's only 20. She's learning still. Mm. But she's got a great future ahead of her, both with Man City and England. She's going to be a mainstay in that attacking lineup.
Yeah. Working for Fox, then, how do the likes of USA rate England?
Heather O'Reilly, who I sit next to on the desk, former US player, she was raving about them the other day, saying, you guys are good. It's certainly a team to watch out for. Yeah, I think they've put a little bit of fear into certain nations, finishing top of the group, winning all 3 games, playing so well in the last game. I think they're certainly a team to fear. You know, it just seems like, just looking at the side of the bracket, you've got France, England, USA, Australia. The left of the bracket seems quite strong compared to the right. So at any point, you know, quarterfinals, semifinals, it looks like England potentially could meet France or USA. Yeah. So that matchup is going to be unreal if it happens. But England, I feel like England shouldn't fear anyone, that the way that they're playing and the rotation of squad is keeping everybody fresh. I think they've got a really, really good chance.
England legend Kelly Smith there working for Fox Sports out in France. All right, ladies, which tie has you rubbing your hands together at the prospect?
Well, the standout one for me is France versus Brazil. And that is because I can't wait to see Renard versus Cristiani. Famiga versus Henri. Who else? Just everyone versus everyone. The 1v1s. Marta, obviously, versus the whole team. Yeah, I mean, that's a standout for me. I do think France will walk away with that because of the defensive frailties of Brazil.
Anne-Marie, which one has you smiling at the prospect?
I'm torn between two, but I'm actually going to plump with what I said earlier about the Netherlands versus Japan, I think that's pace versus pace. And I'm really excited to see what Vivian Miedema can deliver, particularly in that game, for sure. And to see how, you know, with their technical passing game, how Japan are going to be able to move the ball around very quickly. But then in terms of the Holland defence, how they're going to be able to manage that. So for me, I think that's going to be like a game of chess, one move at a time, and then someone will make that strike. Yeah, I'm quite looking forward to that one. I'm really looking forward to it.
Oh, I'm so looking forward to Canada-Sweden. No, I'm not. Mainly, well, I don't know, tough one, because I probably would have selected one of those, but Germany-Nigeria. I think great to look at this because the Germans won't know much about the Nigerian opposition. We know that there are a few frailties there and we're yet to see this German side really. So this is the game when they'll need to click into action more. So I'm looking forward to that one for sure. But the other tie we've all been stepping over, of course, England-Cameroon. Anne-Marie, on paper, this looks like a good tie for England.
On paper, this looks like a good tie for England, but I think they're going to face a really tough test because this is a Cameroon side who are fearless and they will go in for proper tackles, proper tackles for sure. They're not afraid to bump.
We saw some of them against Argentina. Indeed.
They're not afraid to. Yeah, exactly. They're not afraid to go in with shoulders and legs and all kinds. So I think, you know, England are going to be ready for that. I think there's going to be a few yellow cards as well within that game. But, you know, I think England should be able to get it done. But they, you know, expect a bit of a battle in that one. And that match is in Valenciennes, so there will be no issue about heat.
Yes, it's the most northern venue, isn't it?
That's right. So there shouldn't be any issues around that. I think it's going to be a cracking match.
Raf, former England player, you cruised through this stage, really, at the Women's World Cup in 2015. And I was there and I was watching you. And that was the game that made me think, my goodness, they've got something here.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you there. That was the kind of turning point for us because up until then, we were just riding the wave.
And it was Norway, wasn't it?
Yeah, Norway. And it was a good Norway team, to be fair to them. And I think actually on the day that they were a little bit stronger, we just had the luck. And I think when you get to this stage, it starts becoming about luck, especially when we're seeing the likes of VAR ruining games.
And it's the knockout stage as well, right?
Yeah, breaking hearts, left, right and centre. But, you know, England have enough for sure. I think Cameroon are a bit of an unknown, but they'll have enough information and tactical knowledge about them. I just want to know if he's going to rotate again because you just don't know what team is going to be out there. And yes, it's a very different opposition to Argentina, so I wouldn't be surprised to see quite a few.
Did you like Phil Neville's last team, the one that met Japan?
Yes, I did. I think
favourite lineup?
Yeah, I think it has been so far. I would love to see Karen Carney in there, but he sees her as more of a super sub, I think, being able to come and change the game. But can he play Georgia and Fran at the same time? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a question mark. I think we all know that Karen Barsley is going to be in goal. We know that for sure. We know Steph's going to be in that back line. Probably Millie, Lucy Bronze.
And then it's Demi, Alex Greenwood or Demi.
Demi, maybe. Jill Scott will be in that midfield.
Yeah.
For sure. I think we kind of know he's got a core, hasn't he? He's big. You can see
Ellen White will be there for sure, right?
I think the main debates are Fran or Georgia Stanway. Fran or Stan. There we go. Kira Walsh or Jade Moore. Keats is set. Beth or Tony. I think they're the main debates.
Oh, it's an enticing prospect, isn't it? That's the reason to stay with us on this Offside Rule Women's World Cup edition. It's only going to get more exciting as we enter these knockout stages. And I'm looking forward also to this tournament love spreading out of this studio and into the wider populace, because this is where it gets interesting. Well, for now, Friday's a rest day, not only for everyone out in France, but for us here in the studio too. Woohoo! And I am excited about the World Cup. I'm just excited about the prospect of not staying up so late. And Lion, we'll be back though, fear not, on Saturday, following Norway versus Australia and Germany versus Nigeria. Until then, you can keep up to date with everything Offside Rule at Offside Rule Pod on Twitter and Instagram and everywhere you go. Also, our website carries some really great Women's World Cup content, including five things that we've learned following England and Scotland's last fixture. Don't mention Scotland. As well as a team of the group stage. If you want to know the best 11 of the group stage, you can find that on offsiderulepodcast.com. Raf and Anne-Marie, sterling work today. Thank you very much for your company this evening. I'm off for a long lie down in a cool room with a glass of Prosecco. Goodbye!
The Offside Rule Women's World Cup edition is a Muddy Knees Media production in association with Spotify.